This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In Vernon, in August of 2013, Entergy Corporation's president of nuclear operations, William Mole, announced that the Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Plant would be closing at the end of 2014. Mole explained the reasons behind the decision this way.
This decision was based on the economics of the plant, not operational performance, not litigation risk, nor political pressure. Simply put, the plant costs exceed the plant revenue, and this asset is not financially viable.
Since the announcement, Entergy, the state, and local communities surrounding the plant have been preparing for that closure, and it's finally happening in a week and a half on December 29th. Today on the program, we're going to look at the preparations for the shutdown, and we'll talk about where the state and Entergy have come to terms and where they still have some disagreement. Joining me now is Mike Toomey, Entergy Vice President of External Affairs. Mike Toomey, nice to have you on the program.
Thank you, Jane. I'm happy to be on.
Chris Recchia is Vermont's Commissioner of the Public Service Department, and he's here with us. Well, welcome back, Commissioner.
Thanks, Jane. Nice to be here.
Mike Toomey, can you tell us what actually happens on December 29th? I mean, it's not quite like you just hit a light switch and all the power goes out. So exactly what happens? It's actually quite quick.
I will. Before we start, I just want to take 30 seconds to say that I really appreciate the efforts of the men and women who work at Vermont Yankee. They've done an excellent job of operating that plant for 41 years, and they've done an exceptional job for the last 16 months, knowing that this would be the last year of operation. Chris Wamser and his team deserve a tremendous amount of credit for finishing strong and doing their jobs in the professional way that they do it. Turning to your question, what will happen on December, at the end of December, which at this point we're pretty certain it'll be December 29th, is the plant will cease generating power, which means that it will stop sending power out to the electric grid, and it will continue to be an operating facility in the sense that the lights will be on in the power plant for the employees to continue to do their work, but we will no longer be sending power out to the electric grid through the switchyard that is on the property. And then as soon as the plant stops operating, we will begin the process of taking the spent nuclear fuel out of the reactor and moving it into the spent fuel pool. So that process is referred to by the engineers and the other professionals who do the work as defueling the reactor. And that process will take a few weeks. But by the middle to third week of January, there will be no nuclear fuel in the reactor, and all of the spent nuclear fuel will be either in the pool or in dry cask storage on site.
Very, very few of us have ever been in a nuclear power plant. And I don't know your familiarity exactly with the operations at Vermont Yankee, but are there sounds that happen when that shutdown is happening? I mean, can you feel it if you're in there? Like, this plant is shutting down. Certainly the lights are staying on, but this is not generating power. Or is it also digital at this point that it just is sort of anticlimactic?
Well, the process of making electricity, the actual nuclear fission process, is generally speaking not audible outside of the reactor vessel, but we have huge turbine blades that are pushing the power out onto the electric grid, and those things obviously make a lot of industrial noise. And when you stop generating power out to the grid, the turbine blades have ceased operation. So you will be able to notice the difference from pretty much anywhere inside the plant.
Commissioner Recchia, does the state have anything to do on the 29th?
We don't have anything specific to do. We are obviously in close coordination with Vermont Yankee. I want to echo the points that that Mike said about the workers. I think they have done a tremendous job, and we do have our nuclear engineer on site, and he will be continuing to be on site.
When the plant shuts down, you have to leave the spent fuel rods in the pools to cool for a while. As you mentioned, Mike Toomey, they move from the reactor into these spent pools. And how long do they stay there?
Well, generally speaking, they can stay in the spent nuclear fuel pool for a very extended period of time, if that's the right approach. The fuel pool itself is designed to hold the spent nuclear fuel for a very long time. What our plan is over the next 5 years is that we will move all of the spent fuel rods into dry cask storage, which are essentially very large canisters that are on a concrete pad in the yard outside of the plant, outside of the power plant structure, but within the protected area. And we expect to complete the movement of that spent fuel into dry cask storage by the end of 2020.
So that's about five or six years that they're going to stay, those spent fuel rods are going to stay in the pool. And Chris Recchia, my understanding is that you and the state of Vermont would like to see emergency protocol in place for that entire time while those fuel rods are in these pools. And Entergy has asked the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to be able to reduce the number of people that are on emergency personnel duty that they have on staff after a little more than a year. So in 2016, they would like to reduce that number. Mike Toomey, I'll give you a chance to respond too, but Chris Recchia, why do you think that there should remain a more robust protocol?
Right. And some of this, Jane, is not so much their on-site staffing, and I'm sure Mike will talk about that, as much as it is that the state of Vermont still feels a responsibility to be responsive to emergency planning and be prepared in the event, the unlikely event that there is something. And I know that, you
like
know—
Like what?
Well, there's, without getting too technical, there's, you know, water in the pool that's required to stay on the rods in order to keep those safe. It's an active system. It requires actively paying attention to what's going on there. And the state of Vermont and emergency management still believe that there's issue for public security and public comfort that we're paying attention to this. So we feel like the offsite emergency management plans still need to stay in place, and during the time that this active water cooled system needs to still be maintained. It's a disagreement we have more with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission than with Entergy per se. So you know, we are working with the NRC to try and find a path forward that we're comfortable with, but we do feel like the offsite emergency management needs to be maintained at a reduced level, but nonetheless be maintained through that, at least that period.
At a reduced level, isn't that what Entergy is asking for?
Well, Entergy is asking to cease funding for the offsite emergency planning, and ceasing funding is not reduced, it's zero. So we need to find a path that we can all be comfortable with.
And Mike Toomey, why does Entergy feel that ceasing funding is the right way to go? What can you explain how you see the ability to respond to an emergency if, as Commissioner Recchia said, something, for example, happened with the water that goes into those pools?
Well, I think, Jane, that there are a couple of different levels to the question. The first is we do have emergency planning protocols in effect today. Those emergency planning protocols will remain exactly the same until early 2016. So first of all, there's no change until we get to around April of 2016. At that point, the proposals that we've made, the license amendment requests that we've made, are reflective of the scientific issues that demonstrate that the risk of a rapidly unfolding accident go down to near zero. And so it's not that there are no emergency protocols that will be in place at that point. It's just that there will be different emergency planning protocols in effect. We still will have very robust emergency planning protocols. We will have personnel at the site who can respond to an unexpected event. But essentially, the risk of it happening in a rapid fashion, in the way that it could happen for an operating nuclear facility, changes after a certain amount of time, because the heat in the spent fuel rods dissipates over time. And when you get to a certain point, there is no credible threat of a rapidly unfolding event. And so what you're doing is you're changing your staffing, you're changing your protocols to move from a potential rapidly unfolding event to a different kind of event that would not unfold rapidly. And therefore, the staffing levels can be reduced and the protocols that we follow can be a little different. Many, almost all, of the different emergency preparedness capabilities that we have in place today will remain in place even after April 2016, but there are some significant changes that happen when you get out of the window where a rapidly unfolding event is possible.
Let me just ask you, because as soon as you start to say rapidly unfolding event and how much less likely that is, I think there's a question about, is there a possibility for terrorism still on the site, even once those fuel rods are in the pools to cool? I mean, that would be a rapidly unfolding event, certainly.
Well, I think that gets to the question. It could. First of all, we have robust security measures to deal with any kind of a threat, including a terrorist threat. The rapidly unfolding is has to do with the situation where the spent nuclear fuel could cause a fire or another kind of event in a very quick time frame. And no matter what the cause would be, whether it's some individuals doing something they shouldn't do or something else, just as a matter of physics, the consequences of an event with the spent nuclear fuel change as the heat content dissipates with the fuel. So this is all a product of careful analysis by experts, engineers, technicians, PhDs, who work at the plant, as well as those who review that by the NRC, who can review this question and make a determination that after a certain point, the existing emergency preparedness capability that we will retain are more than adequate. So we will still have very robust emergency preparedness capability. It will just change. What Commissioner Recchia was referring to is, you know, there's a question of what kind of capabilities we maintain at the site. And I actually think that we're in pretty close agreement on that. But another aspect of our emergency preparedness planning is that we provide certain funding to local communities. And obviously, those local communities would prefer that that funding continue for a variety of reasons, whether it's to be ready for an event at Vermont Yankee or whether it's to be ready for Hurricane Irene or some other natural event. So I think that where we have had an inability to reach consensus is on the question of whether we should be required to continue to fund those local communities for the emergency planning capabilities that they have.
We're talking today about the preparations for the shutdown of Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Plant and what happens next. And listeners, if you have questions, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. So what we've just been talking about there, the funding for emergency preparedness and the level of funding, that's one sticking point in the negotiations between Entergy and the state over what happens after the plant shuts down. Chris Recchia, what's the general tenor, though, of the discussions that you're having?
Well, I think they're very constructive. And as Mike said, I think we tend to agree on more things than we disagree on. And one of the things I would say is I think the relationship is extremely professional and respectful, and we continue to try and work through these issues. So I'm pleased with that. I want to emphasize in terms of the settlement agreement that we reached almost a year ago now, Entergy has done everything they said they would do, and we appreciate that. And I think we are continuing to work, you know, constructively through this.
The plant will go into safe store, what's called safe store, once the fuel rods are out of the pools and in dry cask storage. And the plant will sort of, as I understand it, remain in a sort of a frozen state, in a sense, until decommissioning actually takes place when there's enough money in the decommissioning fund. Mike Toomey, what are the dates you're projecting for full funding?
Well, that is a matter of speculation at this point that really no one can predict with certainty. I think, first of all, there will be some preliminary work that is done along the continuum of decommissioning. It's not an either or situation where there's no work being done or all the work being done. There will be some work being done all the way along, but the major decommissioning and dismantling activities will need to wait until there is adequate funding in the Nuclear Decommissioning Trust Fund. In the site assessment study that we provided a couple of months ago, what we said was, if you assume the most conservative estimates about returns in the Decommissioning Trust Fund, along with the ability to get recovery from the Department of Energy on certain spent fuel management activities, you end up with this safe store scenario for an extended period of time.
You're looking at like 2072.
Right. But if you assume that you will get recovery from the Department of Energy, which we do assume that. We recovered more than 90%, maybe even 92% of the dollars that we spent in the last lawsuit with the Department of Energy. What we have said is you can, if you have a reasonable return in the Decommissioning Trust Fund, you could expect for major decommissioning activities to begin as early as the 2040s. And if you do better in the Decommissioning Trust Fund than the relatively conservative estimates that we used, it could even be sooner than that. So I would say at this point, we're not going to make a projection on exactly the year, but it will be, I would think, at least 20 to 25 years under most reasonable assumptions, and it could be 35 years on the outside.
Chris Recchia, it looks like total decommissioning will cost about $1.25 billion. How mm-hmm. much is in the decommissioning fund right now?
Right now we have $655 million thereabouts as of a few weeks ago. And, you know, there is a difference between what the total decommissioning will cost and what the NRC requires for the radiological decommissioning part and when that trigger occurs. And
that's a lower number.
That's looking in the Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's about $820 million dollars worth of work necessary to do license termination or the radiological work.
So that could start once there's about $820 million in the fund. But the total decommissioning all put together is going to be more like $1.25 billion.
Yeah. The only modification I would make to that is the spent fuel management piece is really – it's separate work that the Department of Energy has said that they take responsibility for, and that's why they need to pay back either the Decommissioning Trust Fund or Entergy, depending on where that's fronted. And those costs are part of the decommissioning because obviously moving the fuel into dry cask is part of the decommissioning, what I would call the decontamination and dismantlement work.
We're going to get into a little bit more of that coming up as we look here at the shutdown of Vermont Yankee scheduled to happen on December 29th. Listeners, if you have a question, you can call 1-800-639-2211. Or post on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Coming up, we'll also be joined by a representative from Windham County to look at local plans and concerns. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Plant shuts down for good on December 29th, and today we are exploring what the conversations between Entergy and the state look like and what the likely scenario is for getting the funding ready to decommission the plant. If you have a question for Mike Toomey, Entergy Vice President of External Affairs, or for Chris Recchia, Vermont Public Service Department Commissioner, call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your questions on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. We're going to get to your questions in just a moment, but first let's bring in Chris Campany, Executive Director of the Windham Regional Commission, to talk a little bit about how the communities that surround the plant in three states are preparing for the changes to come. Hello again, Chris. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having us.
So the plant staffing is going to be down from about 550 people to a little over 300 by January once that that shutdown occurs. That number then again goes down by more than half in 2016. And then when the fuel is removed from the pools, there will be only about 55 employees. How are you preparing for that job loss and for the lost revenue from the plant?
on the first, I mean, we were actually really fortunate that Vermont Yankee gave, you know, more than a year's notice that the plant was going to close. The Windham Regional Commission has been active in the Public Service Board dockets, and our folks have been primarily on what would happen when the plant would eventually close for whatever reason. And because of that, we actually had a good sense as to what the economic, employment, and fiscal impacts were going to be under different closure scenarios. So we have already had some sense of the magnitude. It's really helpful to have Yankee's description about what the employment impacts are going to be, the timetable. So the three areas that are going to be most affected, which is Windham County in Vermont, Cheshire County, New Hampshire, and Franklin County, Massachusetts, we're all meeting together frequently, talking about the impacts, especially the employment impacts and the impacts in our communities. Each of these counties has what's called a comprehensive economic development strategy. And so we've been talking about what each of these areas have already been looking at economic stagnation. And so we've already been talking about different strategies to promote better economic development. Now we're about to experience a major impact. Certainly one of the biggest this region's ever seen, probably since the closure of the mills up in Bellows Falls. And
is the bigger impact from the loss of jobs or from the lost revenue?
It's the loss of jobs, with that the loss of income. While in Windham County, while BY employs about 1% of the population, it's about 5% of the income. And so we've actually, the three entities and the three states, the three regional commissions, have commissioned a study that we'll hope to release soon. And what it's saying is that the impacts of the loss of that income are going to be substantial as far as the millions of dollars that come out of the local economy. And then they're going to be more job losses related to the loss of that income. And we're trying to pin down better exactly what sectors are more likely to see those losses, so that we can better target those areas. But it's not just the job losses; it's the loss of that significant portion of our income, because Vermont Yankee jobs paid very, very well.
Do you feel optimistic, or are you concerned? I mean, those things aren't mutually exclusive, I understand, but, you know, generally, what's your feeling?
I'm concerned. This is a major, there's going to be a major impact to our local economy in ways that we're trying to get a handle on what's going to happen, but we're really not going to know until they begin to manifest themselves. But where I'm optimistic is that, for instance, Windham Regional Commission is working more closely with our local regional development corporation, the Brattleboro Development Credit Corporation, more closely than we ever have before. We just wrapped up a big business and village resiliency and revitalization project in the wake of Irene that we worked on together. And so that was actually a really good experience to learn what we can do to kind of pool our resources and work together. And then the relationships that we have with our counterparts in New Hampshire and Massachusetts, the strengthening of those relationships is good, because, the people who live here, drive across those state lines and across the river all the time. So we really need to look at economic development as really more of a tri-state regional effort, as opposed to just, something that happens in Vermont, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts.
Chris Campany is Executive Director of the Windham Regional Commission. Thank you so much for talking with us just a little bit about the preparations that you're making. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We are talking about the closure of Vermont Yankee and what happens next. Let's go to some of our calls. James is on the line from Leicester. Hi, James. Go ahead. You there, James? All right. We'll see if we can get James back. In the meantime, you know, we were talking a little bit before we spoke with Chris Campany about funding and, you know, when things can be removed from the funds. And just very briefly, there are some issues surrounding what other things you can take money from the fund for, like emergency preparedness or maintenance of the spent fuel in storage. Chris at Rekia, that's another area where the state has some interest and some ongoing negotiations with Entergy.
Yes, Jane. The Decommissioning Trust Fund is covered by a master agreement that was paid for by Vermont ratepayers and has been accruing quite successfully additional money since then, but no new money has been added to it. And so the state of Vermont and its ratepayers have a very strong interest in how that money gets spent. We think the Nuclear Regulatory Commission rules are that you spend that money on decommissioning only, and it's pretty narrowly focused. However, there are waivers and opportunities for exemptions that that the NRC has granted in certain cases for, let's say, spent fuel or other issues. And you know, I do want to thank Entergy because this was going to be a major area of disagreement. We obviously want the fund to stay secure and the principal to stay secure and to grow as quickly as it can over time. Entergy has chosen to fund the initial spent fuel movement and the dry cask storage out of a line of credit instead of asking to take it out of the fund. That is a huge advantage, and I very much appreciate that. We will still have ongoing issues about what money should and shouldn't come out of that fund.
Let's try to go to James in Leicester again. James, you there now? Can we get you?
Yeah.
Great.
Hello?
Yeah, we hear you.
Hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So I have a question. I mean, for those of us laymen out here, I'm just wondering whether one of your best can explain to us why the process of decommissioning is so unbelievably expensive and takes so unbelievably long. I mean, are there not teams in the world in Japan, in Germany, in France? I mean, is this process put out to competitive bid? It just seems appalling.
Yeah, let me put that to Mike Toomey. Mike Toomey, the NRC gives you 60 years to decommission a nuclear power plant once you've shut down. So James is saying, what the heck is it that takes so long, and why is it so expensive?
Well, those are really two questions, and they're related, but they are two separate questions. The first is, in terms of the delay in beginning the major decommissioning activities is the result of waiting for the trust fund to grow to a sufficient level so that you have enough money to both begin and complete the project. The process of decommissioning itself, once the major decommissioning work begins for compliance with NRC rules, I would say that that's probably no more than an 8 to 10 year process. On the complexity of the work, this effort has to be done in a very careful manner to make sure that you are eliminating, if you can, the risk of any radiological exposure to workers or to the public. Everything has to be taken apart and then disposed of in a very specific process that preserves the public health and safety, and most importantly, or more importantly, or as importantly, depending on your point of view, for the safety of the workers who are actually doing the decommissioning work. So this is not like knocking down a gas station that is no longer in operation. There are very strict, comprehensive protocols that require you to take pieces and parts of the power plant, dismantle them, package them, and ship them to specific facilities that are expert in dealing with this kind of material. Not all of the material is of the same type. Some material can be disposed of in one type of facility. It's called, for example, a low-level radioactive waste disposal site. There are other parts that need to go to different types of facilities. So in general, it's a very careful process, and as a result, it takes time. And the experts in the United States and the experts that we work with are the best in the world. And there aren't best practices that we haven't reviewed taken into consideration and in some cases implemented if we thought it was appropriate. So I'm very confident that this process is going to be done as cost effectively and as safely as it should be done in this case.
All right, we're going to leave it there for today, but hey, we know we've got at least 25 years, maybe up to 60 to talk about this, so we will continue to follow this, looking right now at a December 29th date for shutdown for Vermont Yankee, and then we move into what happens next. Mike Toomey is Entergy Vice President of External Affairs. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thanks, Jane. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about the project.
And Chris Recchia is Vermont Public Service Department Commissioner. Thanks to you.
Thank you very much, Jane.
Coming up, we will head into our performance studio for some live music from Lowell Thompson. That's just ahead on Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. I have made a mad dash through our building from our normal Vermont Edition studio to our wood-floored and spacious performance studio, where Burlington musician Lowell Thompson and his band have been setting up all morning to perform live for us today. Lowell, thank you so much to you and to the band for being here today. It's a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for having us.
So can you just kick us off with a song from your new album, Stranger's Advice?
Sure. Hey, yes, things on.
Well, you can talk about the blues, but just don't talk like you got them. And please don't tell me about your heart or where it went wrong. I got a couple days left. Thank you.
That's Lately I'm Down by Lowell Thompson, performing live in our studio today here on Vermont Edition. Lowell, please introduce us to your band.
On our left, we have Mr. Brett Lanier playing the pedal steel guitar. Yes, that's what there it is. Nice. Kirk Flanagan playing bass. That's Steve Haddock behind me playing the drums. That's Mr. Leon Campos playing the piano.
A lot of familiar faces here in the studio today. Lowell, I love that line at the beginning of the song. You can talk about the blues, but please don't talk like you've got them. A little bit of a defensive posture there. The blues, something you're pretty familiar with?
The blues, I'm wearing a blue shirt.
Not so, quite the type of blues I was thinking of.
I like to think we're all vaguely familiar with the blues, I'd say.
So why can somebody else not talk about them and you got them? It sounds like, you know, in that song at least, the characters got them bad.
I think it's more kind of telling someone that might complain too much to stop complaining. That's more what I meant by that line, I think. I guess, yeah, just getting sort of tired of the chit-chat.
You have played everything in your career from, you know, punk to alt-country, and you say that the thing that has always stuck is how the songs speak to you. So when you're writing a song, does the kind of melody and the genre that the song might fit into come to you as you're writing the song, or do you try to pick a lane?
You know, I really, there's no preferred method. It's, I'd say every song is different, and it's one of those things I don't look into too much and question. It's sort of, if it's working, it's working, and if it's not, it's pretty clear that it's not. But it's one of those things where I kind of, I'm not someone who writes all the time. When I have a place and no one's home, I'll try and do that, and if it works, I'll keep chasing it. But yeah, it's one of those things. It's when it's one that usually ends up sticking around, it just kind of happens, and I don't like to look into it too deeply, because then it's like, oh, well, yeah.
Ruins the magic.
Maybe.
So then when it comes to putting together an album like Stranger's Advice, do you have to tweak things to have some sort of continuity in the album?
I think with albums, I definitely like to have at least a continuity where the songs all seem to fit together, which is, the mic, right. Let's use the mic more. That's important. Yeah, I guess in today's music world, there's a lot less focus on the album. But for this past record, for us, the idea was to have a collection of songs, and we got rid of some songs as well. But I try to do that with whatever kind of record we're making. Just make sure there's a sequence, and that's really important to me and a lot of other people. I mean, you know, sometimes, actually, I was talking to Rick the other day about if you put something into iTunes and the it just shuffles it automatically sometimes for you, and that kind of ruins the sequencing that the artist might have done. So if you're listening, iTunes, stop doing that.
Well, did you put a sequence together for us? What are you going to play for us next?
The next one we're going to do is a song called Different Name. It's a one to depress you even more, if you'd like. I'm stumbling, just looking for a sign. Well, I'm backwards, I'm a man, the stitches outside. So do it over again, or leave it alone, or make the backyard ghost the one that you were trying to fix it for. 'Cause even these tears run away. Yeah, even these tears run away. Well, I saw you had your chance to drive it on your own.
was leaning up against another one that had been sold. Then that you laid down in the dark, did you blame your pride? You got your friends, your family, your lovers. It's not a past you leave inside. A sham for such a pretty dream. So let's fall back to earth and love under a different name.
That was Lowell Thompson performing Different Name from his new album, Stranger's Advice. Lowell, last year you toured with Graham Parker and The Rumor, and I understand that in the new year you're going to be touring with Kelly Raven, another local artist who's been here on the show, mm-hmm. and you're going to be heading to Philadelphia, through New York, New Hampshire. Do you like going on tour?
It depends. There's times when it's great, and there's most times that it's not great, but it's fun being with your pals as long as everyone wants to be there. When people don't want to be there, it's not as much fun.
Who doesn't want to be there?
Well, I guess that would be Steve sometimes.
Steve's being called out. And no Mike to defend
himself.
Anybody.
He was closest.
You grew up in Vermont, in Shelburne and in Burlington. Then you went out west. Then you came back to UVM. So what keeps drawing you back to Vermont?
It's home. I mean, I have a lot of family here, and there's something special that always kind of draws you back in. It's definitely a magnet of sorts, and a lot of other places don't have that ability. I know a lot of friends that, you know, move away from the places they grow up, and there's something special that I know all of us Vermonters know about, and people that come here from other places. So it's one of those things it's good to go away, but it's always great to come back as well.
Well, I want to hear one more song, but before we do, I want to say a thank you to John Billingsley and Chris Albertine for engineering this performance. And I want to remind our listeners that our annual music show is actually coming up this Friday. We're doing things a little differently this year. Instead of asking for your top song that came out during the past 12 months, we want to know about a song, any song that felt like a soundtrack to your year. So you can tell us about the song and why it mattered to you. Record yourself on your smartphone, send the audio file to vermontedition@vpr.net, and then tune in on Friday. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks very much for listening. Lowell Thompson, the whole band, thank you guys so much for performing. And please take us away with Make Your Mark.
Thanks, Jane. Check. Hey, just going to see if it gets that monitor on. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Thanks, pal.
time that they touch your cold hard skin. Do you hate the sound? And do you hate the song you're singing?